Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Don Linn, which is L-I-N-N. Hey, Don, how are you?
Good morning, David. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
So maybe you, since you're sort of at this point an unaffiliated book professional, maybe you could talk a little bit about your history before we get into some questions that I have for you about some of your ideas.
Sure, David. I got into the book business through a rather roundabout route about 10 years ago. I had started my career spending about 15 years as a mergers and acquisitions investment banker on Wall Street. And then I ran a family agribusiness in Mississippi, and when that came to an end, I was casting about for something to do and ended up buying Consortium Book Sales and Distribution in St. Paul, which distributed about 100 independent publishers, some of the really first-rate independent publishers in the country, in my view, and owned that for, I guess, a little over 5 years, which I sold to Perseus Books at the end of 2007. After that, I became the publisher at the Taunton Press, publisher of the book group at the Taunton Press for a couple of years, and am now out on my own doing some consulting and advisory work for small to medium-sized publishers who are trying to navigate their way through the chaos that is the transition from pure print to whatever comes next.
Well, and it is an interesting time, I think, not necessarily easy for publishers, and I'm pretty certain this crosses over all sizes of publishers.
Exactly.
But your experience with Taunton, which I think is, I would say, is more of a medium size than a small publisher,
sure,
probably gives you some, and of course one that fits this category of being a specialized publisher with a really deep well of information and connection that's you know, somewhat unusual compared to many other publishers.
Exactly. Taunton has a terrific library, both formal and an informal wealth of knowledge, if you will, but photography and video and text and web and all sorts of media covering with deep, deep knowledge in the do-it-yourself or home repair markets, and we were able to combine some of those elements to produce some pretty dynamic material, both on the web and in some unusual book formats. The trick that we faced there, and it's the same trick that most publishers are facing as we're entering this new era, is less technological as the tools and so forth come into place, and really more how do you monetize the value that you've assembled in these things, and I think that's the struggle that even people with a superior niche position are all facing right now.
In terms of how do they, I mean, I guess there are two elements to that I think are interesting to talk about. One is are in an economy where value is declining.
Right.
People are used to either getting entertainment for free or paying very little for it. And book content is, you know, I think publishers see book content as differentiable and having more value, but maybe customers do not.
I think that's exactly right, and I worry a lot about pricing of content, and you know, I think there are some things in place and under discussion right now about trying to force it higher. I'm not sure those are going to stick because there really is an awful lot of free content available, and so the trick for publishers is finding a way to truly demonstrate value in ways that they maybe necessarily haven't had to think of before, and all of us are feeling our way along through that.
Well, do you think, and I guess this is something else that, you know, seems to come up frequently, do you feel that now that the distribution system, well, let's put it, I guess I should rephrase that, because we still have all of the traditional distribution systems in place, you know, with bookstores and other forms of retailers and distributors and wholesalers, still account for some, you know, 90 to 95% of all the sales of book or book-related content. But in the emerging side of the business, which is digital, there seems to be a change afoot in who is really in charge, that the delivery system is Apple with the iTunes and Amazon with the Kindle and its kind of closely tied-in delivery system. So, you know, how what do you think happens there in terms of publishers being able to affect the value chain?
Well, I think you've hit the nail right on the head. We've really got one foot in each market right now. Obviously, the old business is still, as you point out, producing substantially all the revenue and more than all the revenue, all the profit in publishing. But we all know we've got to make that move to new markets. And the question is how fast and what kind of bets can you or should you make as a publisher to position yourself for the new world without trashing your old business or underfunding your old business and killing the goose that's laid the golden egg for all these many years. Dominique Rocca at Sourcebooks talks about it as, you know, she's really running two businesses right now, and I think that's the right way to look at it. And in fact, she keeps a separate set of books for her, what she calls her new business, which is the experimental digital piece of it, than she does from her old business, so that they can actually measure how successful they are in each. And in the new business, you're right, there are lots of efficiencies and opportunities there, but there's lots of fear that publishers have of making the jump because they are afraid they might make the wrong bet. And there's a great deal of risk in making a specific technology bet right now. And in my judgment, the risk and reward ratio for publishing has gotten way out of whack. And that what I'm trying to say is that even if you're wildly successful in the digital markets as they're currently configured, you're taking enormous risks, and the returns that you're going to get are pretty marginal. So until we get some tipping point, or until we all figure out some new business model that allows us to capture the value that we think we're creating and makes consumers realize or recognize that value, it's a tough row to hoe, and I think the transition is going to continue to be difficult for everyone.
Well, one thing I noticed, you have a blog, which I read most recently. The blog is called Bait and Beer. I think has something to do with your past experience. BAITNBEER for anyone who's listening and wants to look at it. And your report on the Tools of Change Conference, which just closed a few days ago, I thought was really, really excellent. And one of the things you said, and you said some really good things, I mean, a number of things that are really good here, but one of the things you said was at the end that the industry is not making changes we need rapidly enough. And maybe you could sort of expand on that idea thinking about it from a practical point of view, if you were, you know, thinking about what could publishers do or what could other people do who are in the business to make that change happen.
Yeah, and when I say we're not moving fast enough, obviously different people are moving at different speeds, and some folks are inclined to be and frankly positioned to be sort of bleeding edge, but an awful lot of people, particularly in the small to medium size and in the independent ranks, simply don't have the resources or the time, being one of the most valuable resources, to really take that step out. And it's not an irrational position to say we're going to go slow and watch what happens. That said, I don't think it's in anyone's interest to just hunker down and wait and see completely. I think there's some things that people can do that are, if not inexpensive, at least not as expensive as making a big bet right now. And number one on that list, I would say, is get yourself educated. I think anyone in publishing needs to be attending, if not all the conferences, then at least a couple or three a year, and looking at webinars that are on almost daily about what's going on, so that you do understand the developments, which change, as you know, David, almost weekly, so that you can at least know what in the world or where you may need to end up as things begin to shake out. Another piece is I think people, even the most bibliophilic of us, need to buy and own and use e-reading devices and all different kinds of them, and think about, you know, readers who are using those and how can we serve them and what are the pluses and minuses and what does content look like and how my content might look like on it. Figure out what works and what doesn't work. Probably, if I were going to make an investment right now as a small to medium sized publisher, it would be investing in workflow and design and in agile content. And Brian O'Leary's written some really smart things about agile content, but it starts by using and implementing an XML or a similar workflow from the get-go, which is a hard thing for people to do who are accustomed to starting with Word documents and flowing it through in traditional ways. But whatever the outcome of the e-reader wars or the format wars end up being, it's pretty clear that it's going to be to everyone's benefit to have your content in a format that flows to whichever devices come in a nice way. And that can be chunked, and that has the right metadata along with it, and can really find its way to as many possible readers on as many possible devices. And a lot of people have been reluctant to do that because it's hard and it's disruptive to the internal workflow, and we've got to get a book out next week. But that's where where I'm encouraging people who are asking me to spend their time and energy, is to do those sort of dirty fingernail things back in the back that will allow you to react to whatever the outcome of the other things are. And then finally, just using the cheap and free tools that are out there to market whatever types of books you have. And you can find your big mouths, and they're mostly on Twitter and on Facebook, and the people are talking books, and it's, you know, it's yet another way that makes discovery possible, along with metadata and the other things.
Yeah, I think you've made some really good points there. I think, it just seems logical to imagine a universe of multiple forms of distribution of your content,
yeah,
where you can't really predict all of the different forms that might exist that get your content into the most basic form that is flexible for as many environments,
exactly,
as possible. I mean, this whole thing of having to convert documents from one form to another is really inefficient and time-consuming.
I have the scars to prove that is a very difficult way to go.
Yeah, it is. No, and the tools are evolving, I think. I mean, clearly, it will get better. I think back to days when, when digital page layout was first invented, which was probably in the 80s, and, if you picked the wrong system and you invested a lot of time and energy, like in FrameMaker, and then it turns out that InDesign and Quark become the standards and everything you did has to be undone or relearned.
Right.
I think that definitely scares people. But I think XML is is the only thing we have.
Right.
That gives you that kind of flexibility and ability to deploy. Of course, this is pretty wonky for anybody who's not literally in the trenches of publishing at this point. But you know, the other point that you made that I thought was really important in your blog, but you've alluded to here, also is the amount of data that we have about how people are going to interact with new forms of technology is very limited. And some of it can be experiential, you know, as you indicated. You know, how are you going to imagine a digital universe if you've never spent time with all the digital devices that exist? And of course, there's a new one every day.
Right.
You know, I think I did a survey of all the terrible names of ebook reading devices, but in the course of doing that, I discovered how many of them there are, and I was shocked. There's like a new machine going to be released constantly, almost every week this year.
Right, and we know that most of them will fall out, but we don't know which of them will fall out.
That's true, and some of them may become specialized to particular markets, the way the slate or the tablet computer has become useful to contractors and medical people, where the general consumer really doesn't care.
Right. So your particular type of publishing, whether it's academic or medical or fiction or whatever, a completely different device may be just the right thing for you, whereas another device might be more appropriate for others. So
right.
You got to look around.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And, of course, then the other thing that I thought was really interesting recently was Nintendo announcing that they're putting books on the DS. And that Sony, who is, I don't think, really recognized the value that they have in the PSP, has started putting, you know, there are books for the PSP now.
Yeah, and I think as we begin to see enhanced books that are more than just a soundtrack or something with the book, that those types of devices, in particular the tablet devices from Apple and Android and wherever else, and Nokia and other places, are going to be a great platform for meaningfully enhanced books that take the reader into an entirely different experience but still accomplish the mission of the book. So I'm kind of excited about those things, actually. But as you say, I'm wonky about these things.
Well, I think for publishers, I think that is a necessity now. And, of course, the other thing that I think you touched on that publishers will have to deal with over the next few years is learning how to market and to relate to consumers in a different way. And that is much more directly and being much more involved in understanding the mind of the consumer, the person who is actually reading your book.
It changes completely the publishing market, the marketing side and the distribution side of the business when you're more direct to consumer than you are B2B. And it's not a mindset that most publishers have grown up with thinking about. And it'll be interesting to see how many are truly go direct and what other kinds of intermediaries might be able to insert themselves into the business.
Right, and of course that raises another kind of set of concerns for publisher. Again, I guess the nature of our conversation today has been toward the publisher, but you think also about authors and readers and how unexpected things may occur as publishing evolves over the next few years, whether authors' roles will be different. Clearly, readers' roles can
right.
be different. And, you know, if we're in it doesn't necessarily mean, at least to me, that publishers need to slavishly do what a customer tells them to do in terms of what they publish. But it does mean understanding what readers and, in fact, authors now they're much more your partners in this enterprise rather than passive consumers.
They better be, and it becomes a it does become a bit of a burden. I saw John Sargent, the CEO at Macmillan, started a blog yesterday and began to explain the agency model and some of the things that are happening with Macmillan and e-books. And no sooner had he gotten the blog up there than people were saying, well, he's not responding to the comments. He's not. So it's a new world, and it's one that we've all got to evolve and adapt to.
Well, so if you had to pick one thing, I mean, this is a terrible question to ask in one way, but, you know, it just kind of is an interesting exercise. If you could pick one thing that you think is going to be the most interesting focal point for the publishing business, not necessarily publishers, but the whole industry over the next, let's say, year, what do you think it will be?
I think this is the year we're going to start to see some really interesting things in the way of enhanced e-books, or enhanced digital books is what I'd rather call. We've been thinking way too narrowly about what an enhanced book is, and I go back, 20 years plus, and think about the first time you ever saw some of those great Voyager CD-ROMs.
Yep, that Bob Stein did.
That's Bob Stein's original business, yeah. And how that absolutely opened up an entire new world of what we thought of as what can happen on our computers. And I think the tools are coming into place to create those things much less expensively now, and the platforms for distributing those, like iPad and Android and other devices, that we're really going to have some incredible rich media experiences. Now, whether we call those things books or whether we call them something else, I don't know. But I'm very excited about some of the things I see coming down the pipe on that. And I think, Phil, as the devices are released over the next few months, very shortly after that, you're going to see some very cool things coming out on it.
So do you think you'll be involved in that? Is that
Pardon me?
Is that something you want to be involved in?
I would love
to
be involved in it, and I'm working with a few people on some tools and on some other things, and we'll see if it works out.
Well, it sounds. I think I agree with you. I think that's probably one of the coming things. I think it'll be a challenge. I think book publishers are not used to working in other media, and it may mean some cross-fertilization. You know,
I think you got to get you probably got to bring in a gamer and bring in a filmmaker and bring in some of those kinds of peoples, which Random House started doing, I guess, this week. But it's an interesting new approach from the time you begin to conceptualize the book or product, if you call it that. You don't start out with just words on a page. You have to start thinking about an entire collection of things.
True, and that would mean, although what publishers are still good at is, if it's fiction, storytelling. And
that's
if it's
right.
Nonfiction, it's in organizing ideas into long form that makes sense.
And I think the real action on the enhanced book side initially is going to be in the nonfiction area, and you've already seen a fair amount of it starting to pop up in the higher education and education markets, and in children's books will be another great place for it.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, it seems like children's books are ripe.
Just a natural.
That. Yeah, and there's so many, if you look around, I mean,
literally
thousands of wonderful children's books with wonderful illustrations that easily lend themselves to other forms of...
But it brings me back to, I guess, full circle to my original head-scratcher when we began the conversation, is what will consumers pay for it? And can you actually create a business model around these things that... that'll let you make some money.
Well, and that, of course,
at the end of the day, we have to do that.
That is the challenge. And of course, I don't think any of us really knows for sure how this will shake out. There's so many factors, including unpredicted ones, that, you know, you just keep waiting for somebody who you've never heard of before who comes up with a brilliant idea that reflects the needs of maybe a different generation or maybe of a different category of reader,
yep.
and that will succeed unexpectedly the way things like Twitter have become de rigueur in a very short period of time. It's not something no one could have, well, I'm not saying no one, but some people could have predicted the existence of Twitter, but usually these things spring from the mind and creativity of somebody, and they just happen to hit it perfectly.
That's why we better, everybody better be nimble and ready to move quick, because
right.
Otherwise we're going to get left in the dust.
Good advice for publishers. I think that's probably a good place for us to end. I think it's you've done a great job, Don. I really appreciate talking to you.
Well, it's my pleasure talking to you.
This has been David Wilk for Publishing Talks, talking to Don Lynn, who really is, there's no identifier. I can't say Don Lynn of... But Don Lynn of many things. Thanks, Don.
Thank you, David.